This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Hour number two, Sharp Money here on a Tuesday. Been an awesome first hour so far. Jake Asman, Dan Palio joined us. Just some great NFL discussions. Jets, win totals, threw in a little nerfy. Why not? But we move on and we move forward with the show. Joining us now on the Progressive Guest Line, he is the analyst over at CBS Sports HQ. Of course, does a great job with his podcast, Bet the Board. He is the one and only Todd Furman. Follow him on social media at Todd Furman. And Todd, we were kind of going back and forth during the break here. College football, as we kind of pivot now to the collegiate ranks, it's just change. You know, you have to embrace the change that's coming with college football this year. I saw Petitti, the Big Ten commissioner, today say, hey, you know, we're good with 18 schools. We're not thinking about expanding. Yeah, we'll see what happens when more conferences decide to dissolve and more assets become available. But the more things change, the more they stay the same in college football, huh, Todd?
Yeah, famous last words. We're okay with the conference the way things lay out right now. We'll get 2 years of the college football playoff with 12 teams, and Lord only knows where we go from there. If it comes 14 teams or a 16-team expansion, then, of course, the Big Ten, the SEC, and everybody else will want to do everything they can to try and find other programs that make their brands relevant and continue to line their pockets. So it's pretty much the college football landscape is good now. Ask me again in 24 hours. I'm sure we'll have 97 other things to discuss. The only good part about this time of year is that you don't have that much player movement in the transfer portal, that a lot of those things have more or less settled down as we approach the season, you know, barely more than 30 days away with week zero.
Yeah, and those are the two variables, all the transfers and how these teams can get them acclimated quickly. Are we buying the Ole Miss hype? These teams that go all in on the transfer, teams with more continuity are what we're looking for right now in this landscape, plus the 12-team playoff. When we look at the playoff situation first, Todd, I want to get your thought and how you're handicapping things for the season when it comes to a future standpoint, just because we lived in this world in college football where one loss, season was over. Well, that's not quite exactly the case anymore. How has it changed how you're looking at things on the board?
It's a great question, Dustin. I think a lot of it will be subjecting sports bettors to which books are going to keep some of these numbers open, not just to win the national championships, but the yes-no prices that we're seeing right now to get into the college football playoff. I mean, are sports books going to hang those numbers until we see kickoff Labor Day weekend and go, you know what, we're not going to open up those markets again? Or will we have the opportunities to bet some of these teams that lose early on in the year and get a better price? For example, Michigan and Texas, if the Longhorns go into the Big House and were to lose that game, do you see that number drift out and it makes Texas that much more an attractive proposition to try and be included in the field? But I think it's going to give us as better some opportunities and avenues to explore that otherwise haven't been out there. Do I think the best teams will ultimately rise to the top like we see in the NCAA basketball tournament? Sure. Depth is going to play a major role when you look at the added games and the physical toll it'll take on some of these rosters. So we may get that group of five team to pull off an upset in that 12-5 showdown in the opening round of the playoff. Looking for a true Cinderella to be able to run the table, I think, is a little bit of a pipe dream. Where we'll be talking about the Blue Bloods, the Georgias, the Oregons, the Ohio States, most likely being able to withstand that war of attrition and be one of the few teams left standing when we crown a national champion, which I think right now would be in, what, the end of March, about a week before we crown the NCAA basketball champion.
Come around. Yeah, it'll be like Easter Sundays when we will do our coronation. So it's funny, I was going through the DraftKings odds right now, and I only counted seven teams. Now, they don't list all 130 plus on here in terms of to make the playoff odds, but I only counted seven in my little rudimentary scan here that were odds on to make the playoff. Well, it's going to be 12 teams in the playoff, right? So there are open slots available. Kind of reminds me of Thanksgiving dinner when you have that. You go from your little small table, and then you have to go to the big family dinner. You don't know how much turkey to make. Maybe the odds makers don't necessarily know how much meat on the bone with some of these make the playoff odds because of the expanded field. Todd, my guess is chaos will absolutely ensue, and these numbers are going to move dramatically throughout the course of the season.
There's no doubt about it, and we see it all the time in college football. A team that drops that game in September, that gets hot at the right time of year, and we talk about, oh, you wouldn't want to see this team in the college football playoff playing their best football deep in November. And I think the bigger question, when you look at the landscape and how these things are going to play out, we know about the four automatic bids for the Power Four conference champions, but you know, which will be the other leagues not named the Big Ten and the SEC that are able to land multiple bids? Will the ACC get a couple of teams into the field? field. Could the Big 12 see a scenario unfold where it's not just a conference champion that gets in? And that's going to play a major role in terms of how these matchups will set up. And I'll go one step further, guys, and I'm curious to get your take on this. Doing a little back of napkin math, it may behoove these teams not to go ahead and get that bye and finish in those top four spots, but maybe be the fifth seed coming into the field, knowing that you're going to get a G5 opponent in your opening round game, most likely at home, in front of your own fans, and then probably draw the Big 12 champion in that 4-5 matchup. So you could get to the semifinals without having to play an SEC or Big 10 team. And you have to imagine those folks in South Bend, if they see dreams of an 11-1 campaign in their future, that five spot would be all that more attractive, knowing not only would they have those matchups ahead of them, they don't have a conference championship game to deal with either.
And because teams could get weird down the stretch and mess with kind of the sanctity of the game, here's my conspiracy. They add a wrinkle to the playoff where those top seeds get to choose which of the eligible teams are their opponents in those rounds.
Oh, man, well, now you're just...
And then the disrespect is off the charts. But I want to get your thought on this, Todd. Our friends over at the South Point have a very interesting prop up that's available right now. It's minus 110, and it's Georgia and Ohio State versus the field to win the national title. Mm. And look, it's very hard to poke holes through the talent and the rosters with Georgia and Ohio State here. But it does feel like there's value going the other way on the field. Where do you come down on that bet?
I would lean towards the field, guys. I would lay that short price there at that -115 and be willing to go to battle with the Oregons, the Notre Dames, the Ole Misses, and the Texases of the world in some capacity. When I look at Georgia, I have some questions that still need to be answered for me, especially on the defensive side. Do I have Georgia as my number one power-rated team in the country? Yes. Do I think they're that much better than everybody else? Not at all. And when I look at where they are along with the Scarlet and Gray of Ohio State, narrow margins separate them from other teams that are more than capable of making that next step. Now, I think when we talk about college football, not quite like the NFL where it's the separation of the haves and have-nots, and you know that Ohio State and Georgia as roughly $9 favorites are going to be in the inside looking out of the college football playoff. I just think there are other teams that are capable of kind of bridging that gap, and if we're poking holes in Georgia and Ohio State national championship credentials, it's Georgia on the defensive side. It's Ohio State figuring out if Will Howard is going to be their guy, because they're saying the right things about the mobility he'll add to a Chip Kelly offense, but do we think Will Howard has a high enough ceiling to get the Buckeyes where they need to go? Their floor will be as good as anybody on the defensive side with all that veteran leadership and the playmakers they have on offense, but I do have some reservations about those two teams being that much better than everybody else, where I'd be willing to take the tandem against the entire field.
Todd Furman, CBS Sports HQ, Bet the Board Pod. Follow him on X at Todd Furman. And Todd, I saw a duck floating across one of the rivers in Indianapolis today. Of course, the duck, the Oregon duck, making its way east, migrating here towards the Midwest, actually, as they get to play their first season in the Big Ten this year. A lot of hype. They received some first place votes in the Big Ten media poll. Where do you stand on Oregon? They bring in Dillon Gabriel. The roster's fantastic. The coach is fantastic. Can they get over the hump first year in a new conference?
I think they can, but I'd be lying if I said I was 100% convinced. I know there's a ton of optimism, and rightfully so, with Dan Lanning and what he's been able to do. All the offseason talk about Phil Knight being willing and able to open that war chest to bring a national championship to Eugene on the gridiron in his mid-80s. But you look at what Oregon wasn't able to do over the last couple of seasons, and that's the biggest reservation. They were more talented than the Washington Huskies, and they struggled to get through Kalen DeBoer and company multiple times. If they're going to rise to the top of the Big Ten, which is a top-heavy league, they're going to get hit in the mouth regularly by a couple of those power programs, Dan Lanning's going to need to take this team one step further. I think Dillon Gabriel, quite honestly, is an upgrade over Bo Nix when you look at the college resume he has put together. Bo Nix did an outstanding job, and it's not meant to cast aspersions in his direction. But this Oregon roster, for me, I think is a little bit deeper on the offensive and defensive side. I think they're good in the trenches, have to answer a couple questions along that offensive line. And the good thing about the Ducks is we're not going to have to wait until the middle of October like a team similar to Ole Miss who will finally get tested. Oregon is going to have their hands full early on with Boise State. I think that'll give us a good litmus test before they get into the heart of the Big Ten. It's a game they should win comfortably, but Boise will pose some challenges. And when you begin to look at Oregon's schedule, I think anybody in the college football world already has that date circled in week 7, where Ohio State will make the trip out to the Pacific Northwest. And when we're looking at that number, Oregon, a very short favorite at home or a short underdog, depending on your preferred sports book, in a game that'll go a long way in terms of determining the Big Ten regular season pecking order.
And Dylan Gabriel, your favorite for Heisman Trophy at plus 750 over at DraftKings. When I look there, a lot of options. It feels like it's pretty open this year when it comes to the Heisman Trophy. Is anyone jumping off the page, obviously very early in this preseason here, that you're looking at to target in the Heisman market?
You know, this is a market, Dustin, that's been beat up a little bit. You mentioned Dylan Gabriel moving to the favorite role. There's a pretty influential betting group that came in on Gabriel at prices of 10-1 or better, which is why we're now sitting in that 7.5-1 range. I have to give odds makers a ton of credit, because when you look at the Heisman Trophy market, they're not dumb. They know what the blueprint is right now for a guy to go out there and win, you know, the most prestigious award in the sport. So when you're looking at the top quarterbacks for the top programs, all of those numbers very short, and that includes a quarterback that only has one data point. And Nico, I am a Vimella in Tennessee, easy for me to say, at a price less than 20-1. Whereas if we were doing this exercise years ago, we'd have been able to grab him in the 35 or 40-1 range, hoping that price came down. Now, one player that I have taken a little bit further down the board that I think is interesting and haven't seen exactly where his price has come down to, but I think it should be in that 100-1 range, is KJ Jefferson at UCF, leading Gus Malzahn's offense. I mean, he has the real boomer bust potential. And if we look at his numbers at Arkansas, not last year where he was dinged up for a good portion of the season, the year before, I mean, this is a player that can use his legs, can use his arms. And if UCF becomes a dark horse in the Big 12, KJ Jefferson will be a big reason behind it. So his price tag at 100-1, I think, is worth a little bit of a dart throw if you're trying to find somebody significantly further down the board.
Great stuff, Todd Furman, CBS Sports HQ, Bet the Board. Appreciate the time, pal.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Well, the VSiN NFL betting guide out now, and our new college football guide drops August 1st. VSiN Pro subscribers get all the tools to prep for college and NFL. Our experts provide profiles of every team with advanced stats, trends, and power ratings, plus best bets on futures and season win totals. Sign up before the end of July. Receive both guides and full VSiN Pro access to our daily pro picks, 24/7 video and exclusive data like our betting splits all the way through the Super Bowl for that early bird price of just $175. The discount ends July 31st. Don't wait. VSiN.com/subscribe to sign up today. VSiN.com/subscribe. Well, we are hot and heavy here on a Tuesday. Awesome stuff across the board from our guest, Todd Furman, of course. CBS Sports HQ, Bet the Board, does fantastic work in the college football world. Let's stay in the college football world here, because we're going to go from one team in the Big Ten that's new to one team in the Big Ten that's not new, and that's my Penn State Nittany Lions. I feel like Penn State's Groundhog Day. It literally, and maybe again, we talked about the Jets earlier. We're not trying to homer this show. It just happens that these are the news items of the day. But I do have a very close connection, obviously, to this program, just like I do to the Jets. So my emotions sometimes bleed over.
But because you think they're going to be good.
I hope they're going to be good. That's the thing. You hope they're going to be good. You hope for the best. You plan, fear for the worst. But it's Groundhog Day. The Jets are not Groundhog Day. The Jets is like a different story every single year.
Yeah, that's fair.
Jets is a different narrative every year.
Yeah, they're very inconsistent in the ways they break your heart.
Yes. Penn State's the same. It's the same effing story. Great roster, elite defense, average coach, below average quarterback.
Yeah.
Like every year, same story. Same story this year. Here's the difference.
Okay.
I think the quarterback has slightly more upside this year than last year, but the receiving group might be worse. So yeah. It's like I'm trying really hard to get behind a roster that, besides the two most important positions, arguably outside of like defensive end or corner, receiver and quarterback, they're really weak. Maybe like below average in their own conference, nonetheless, the country. So if they don't have a top three quarterback in the Big Ten, if they don't have a top three receiving group in the Big Ten, it's very hard for me to look the other way because the rest of the roster is really good. But, man, those two warts are really bad. So let's listen to Coach Franklin right from the horse's mouth and hear what he has to say, not only about the changes in college football, but also his own team.
Yeah, dramatically. Let's be honest, dramatically, because programs like Penn State and however many there are out there, the playoffs made things even more challenging because now the definition, to your point, has shifted. It was playoffs or bust, which also makes some of those games challenging when literally your players are being told by the fans and the media that you have one loss. The season's almost over in some ways. So I think it's really long term going to be really good for college football. I know it's going to be good for Penn State. Yeah. And I also think it's going to create some, you know, fantastic matchups in the playoffs.
I agree.
So I think there's going to be some unique games and unique opportunities that are presented.
Interesting.
He thinks it's good. They're going to benefit from the expanded playoff.
I agree. I agree.
Well, let's touch on what you talked about.
They could lose three games and still make the playoff.
We don't know how this world is going to shake out.
No idea.
We have no idea. We've been so, like I mentioned with Todd Furman a moment ago, we have been stuck in this world where we believe as college football fans, your team loses a game, the rest of the season is over, you're leaving it up to a committee's hands as to whether you make the playoffs. Well, now more teams can get in. Now these big conferences, you can lose to a Michigan, you can lose to Ohio State, but if the rest of the schedule is strong and you have marquee wins along the way, you will get into the playoffs, and because of the expansion of these conferences, USC is there. You beat USC, that's a marquee win for a program, especially of the caliber of Penn State. But you mentioned Drew Aller. Drew Aller, I want to give him the benefit of the doubt here.
Me too.
But here's what I fear, and I saw a lot of a guy who I don't think is special that people are hyping up at Florida State this year, and that's DJ Uiagalelei at quarterback.
It's a huge addition for Florida State.
See, I think he's soft. I don't think he's a winner. I think he's scared of big moments and making big plays. I do not think he makes throws through the air to win you games late. And I see a little bit of the fear I see in DJU in Drew Aller too a bit.
You might be right.
I think Drew Aller is great downhill, front running when they are dominant and significantly more talented than the other team. I have a lot of questions about him making throws to win games. He could prove me wrong. He is a young quarterback thrust in this position. He gets Julian Fleming in from Ohio State.
That's the only excitement I have in the receiving group is that a guy from Ohio State's coming in.
But
even though he was clearly an outcast at Ohio State if he left.
I just see a lot of DJ Uiagalelei in Drew Aller where I just don't know if he's got that fourth quarter drive in him, and there's going to be a lot of them with this schedule.
You're not going to bet on any Tennessee or Florida State games all year, just so you don't have to say Malavia and Uiagalelei.
That's the best I've ever done, Uiagalelei. And we've had it for years. That's why. I've got to learn all the other
Nico,
ones.
Nico Iamalava.
I just think my tongue wasn't meant to go in the places it has to go when I say the name. That's all. I have to get used to it. It's muscle memory here.
I would prefer if we rescinded
tongue
from strong, talking about your tongue,
tongue
on the show.
Strongest muscle in the body.
All right. I'll give that a second to sink in, and now we move forward. Because I think it's the same story. I think Penn State, so here's the stat that I'll bring you here at the end, and this is to Coach Franklin's point. I agree with Coach Franklin, everything he said. Playoff's been around for 8 years, 2016. Penn State would have made it 6 out of the 8 years in the expanded field, based off of the field that we're now seeing today of 12 teams. They're not good enough to be a top four team. They're not good enough this year to be a top four team. But they're good enough to be a top 12 team. So we move the goalpost of success. If the goalpost of success is make the playoff, Penn State, because that bar was lowered this year, has a chance to achieve that goal. But that's not the goal for me as a fan, I'll tell you that. Certainly not as an alum, definitely not as a donor. The goal for me as a donor needs to be to win. Now, you give them a little time to adjust to this new schedule. I think getting a home playoff game should be the goal for Penn State. And if they are, that would mean 5 through 8. If they are, to me, that raises the bar because then you add revenue. and you give the donors a chance to go out and get a blue chip quarterback, because if they're unable to get over the hump and beat one of those top five teams this year and be a real playoff team, not an expanded playoff team, if they finish in the top four this year, I will come on this show the day after that playoff announcement and I will say I was wrong. But I don't think I'm wrong on my team. I think I know my team pretty well. They are a good, not great team. They're good enough to beat the teams they're favored against. They're not good enough to beat the teams they're not favored against. That has been Penn State's MO for the last decade. I think the only game they've won as a dog in that stretch is when they blocked the field goal against Ohio State, returned it back for a touchdown, won by a score. They are incapable of beating the top-tier teams because they don't have the top-tier talent, and that is where I think they're going to fall short this year, quarterback.
If they end up in the top four of all of college football, I'll get a tattoo of James Franklin's face on my shoulder. What are we talking
about?
We'll
go together. I will get a Penn State tattoo as well. Both get Penn State tattoos.
And people who watch the show
know. I'm not going to get James Franklin's face, though. I'm not committing to that.
People who watch the show know that by doing that, I'm written out of my parents' will if I get a tattoo, which means
I think you're good. They're going to get absolutely destroyed to Ohio when they play.
Yeah, which means I don't get to split a house three ways that's not paid off yet with my siblings. So, I mean, what do I really get in this inheritance in the will? What I'd say about Penn State, the goal is just make the playoffs. Stop. This team has been celebrating Rose Bowl victories when the Rose Bowl's not in the mix for the playoff. Like, that matters. Like, somehow the history of the Rose Bowl supersedes playing for championships here. The big key for me is how is Tom Allen, in his first year as defensive coordinator coming over from Indiana, going to play out here. He's 54 years old. He replaces Manny Diaz. Manny Diaz, while he had this defense playing well, the two corners who were supposed to be top picks last year really regressed the season ago. Can Tom Allen pick up this secondary from where it was last season and fix things? That is a massive key for this team.
I still can't pronounce the new OC's name. Komanicki something.
You say so.
Came from Kansas, did a great job. I mean, go watch Kansas's offense the last couple years. They were electric. They spread it out. They run the football. They throw it. I don't even know what to call their offense the last couple years. Now, they had Jalon Daniels at quarterback, who was just an incredible talent. Drew Aller's not that. We'll see what adjustments are made to that offense as we move forward. But I think Penn State is what they are. What they've always been in my lifetime. They're a fantastic program with an elite roster, elite facilities, unbelievable support, incredible fan base, awesome home field advantage, average quarterback, average in-game adjustment head coach. Not good enough to win the big games in the big spots against the best of the best in college football. Doesn't mean they're not a good team, and they're not going to be a team that probably wins a bowl game in some capacity or makes the playoff, but they're not at that elite level. More on the other side. Sharp Money. Visa.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher on VSIN, the sports betting network.
Hey, go to VSIN.com right now. Why? I mean, we've got all kinds of stuff on there. Best bets, betting splits, exclusive articles, odds by state, the tools, the guides, everything you need to become a winner. Not overnight, but over time. We've got Steve Mackinnon's baseball betting trends and power ratings up for today. Adam Burke is going to be in studio with us in our next hour. Also has baseball best bets and predictions. Of course, Michael Lombardi's got his opinions on the biggest questions facing each NFC team. It's all available to you over at VSiN.com. Sharp Money on a Tuesday, halfway home. Exciting stuff on the horizon, but let's live in the present. And we welcome in our next guest here on the Progressive Guest Line. His name is Bo Brack, PHNX, Cardinals beat reporter and podcast host. Follow him on X at Bo Brack. And Bo, hope springs eternal, because the Cardinals reported for duty today. They are one of those NFC teams that maybe Michael Lombardi has some questions to raise. I think some of the questions, frankly, got answered in the offseason. Kyler Murray looks happy and healthy. You got a great receiver in tow and Marvin Harrison Jr. at the top of the draft. Schedule is intriguing. Couple of really tough games right out of the gate. Buffalo, Detroit, San Francisco, all in the first 5 weeks. So what is the vibe of the Cardinals heading into training camp?
Yeah, I mean, the vibe is great. I mean, as you mentioned, their franchise quarterback, he's happy, he's healthy for the first time, really since 2021. Like, we're 2 years removed from him signing that Mega Million extension, $230.5 million, which kicks in this year. And he's been nothing but emboldened and empowered by this franchise. And it's funny how things work when you – empower your employees, they're happier. They want to do work for you. They want to be successful. And you can see that with Kyler Murray, and it's showing through his leadership. And I think it's going to show in his play right at the gate potentially here for the 2024 season.
All right. Last year under Jonathan Gannon, this was what, a 4-win team? Yet everyone in our world is very hyped up about the Cardinals, and I think there's justification for it, Bo. This team played really hard week in and week out. From a betting perspective with the spread, it's a team you want to back because somehow Jonathan Gannon got these pieces together in year one to play really tough football and contend and beat a few teams that they probably shouldn't beat within those 4 wins. They're very trendy right now. Their win total, 6.5, juiced to the over, which means we're heading towards potential 7.5 here. Do you think that is a realistic number for this squad?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, look, it was good coaching last year and an improved roster this year. And I think you combine that, and I think you're going to see the results. Reality is they didn't have good consistent quarterback play without Kyler Murray. They brought in Joshua Dobbs right before the start of the season, kind of a fire drill to get him ready, and they beat Dallas. It was crazy win there, but he only wins one football game. The rest of the way, you know, this team is basically playing 500 football with Kyler Murray. If Matt Prater, their usually pretty steady place kicker, makes one or two kicks against Seattle, that game's in the books, and the Cardinals are 4-4 under Kyler Murray in 8 games. And this was a top 10 yardage team on offense with Kyler Murray. Kyler Murray, as far as him added to that rushing attack, they were top in most statistical categories on the rushing attack. So I think there should be a lot of excitement for especially this offense. But as you mentioned earlier in this, it's a gauntlet to start things off. A lot of littered with 2023 playoff teams. Now, you know, inevitably somebody takes a step back. But, you know, tell me as far as the Niners, the Lions, the Bills, who's going to take a step back? The Cardinals are going to have to win a couple games that they're not expected to win. And then the schedule eases up, especially at the end. So when you're talking about 6.5, 7.5 wins, they're going to have to stack a lot of them kind of weeks 12 through 16 in order to do that and for it not to be a big sweat going into the final 2 weeks of the season against the Rams and the Niners.
Yeah, and again, the schedule dynamics when you're betting an over on a team that's expected to be bad is difficult because later in the year, if you want to come off of this bet, you're going to have to lay it with San Francisco. You're going to have to lay it with the Rams instead of taking points, taking plus money on the money line when you're betting on a favorite to go over their win total, a team that's expected to win more games. Those are kind of the in-the-weeds dynamics. I've got them dogs in 12 out of the 17 games, dogs or favorites 5 times. So for them to win 7 games, it is an uphill battle. They're going to have to pull off a couple of upsets here in order for them to get over that hump. The good news is they've got arguably one of the best young weapons in all of football to do so. And I think Marvin Harrison Jr. not only has a ton of upside, obviously that's why you take him top 5 in the draft, doesn't have a ton of competition for targets. I mean, I'm looking at the depth chart for Arizona right now. Michael Wilson, Chris Moore, Greg Dortch, Tawan Palmer, Andre Basilia. I mean, those are the receivers right now currently on the Cardinals depth chart. Also, if they're playing a lot of tough teams, they might be behind in a ton of games. Bo, I don't love betting overs for season props for receivers, especially rookies, but man, Marvin Harrison pops off the page here.
It is, and I don't want to have to be a wet blanket there, but the names you mentioned, and we didn't even say Trey McBride. Trey McBride at the tight end position emerged last year. 80-plus catches, 800 yards, and just 12 starts. He kind of had the bide his time. Well, for whatever reason, they gave Zach Ertz 5 starts last season. McBride, I think, is going to be a weapon going forward. And this is a team that likes to run the football. They like to establish the run. And I know they could be playing from behind, but they're bullish as far as how they like to tote the rock with James Conner. And if he stays healthy, he's coming off his finest season as a pro with over 1,000 yards. So, you know, they're going to want to run the football. I think Michael Wilson is a sneaky guy that could take a couple targets away from Marvin Harrison Jr. just because what he's done as far as developing his rapport with Kyler Murray. This is crazy. He's engaged to soccer star Sophia Smith. He said to us in a press conference, his main priority this offseason is not his fiance. It's developing that relationship with Kyler Murray. Said, honey, I'm not coming up to visit you while you play in the Women's Soccer League and get ready for the Olympics. I'm going to hang out with Kyler Murray. So he's been working out on the side with Kyler Murray. They had a great rapport in the final 2 weeks of the season. Michael Wilson, I think, is going to be a pretty solid second, third option for this team. and it's not going to fall all on the shoulders of a rookie in Marvin Harrison Jr., which is good for the team. But if you're looking at that over, it could get a little worrisome, you know, down the stretch of the season.
And a lot of Halo playing in their future, or Call of Duty, whatever it is.
Are we still on that joke? That was like 3 years ago, that joke, right?
Come on.
You're getting to that.
It's good.
You want to make a short joke?
It's good forever, baby. Hey, let's look at this team from this perspective. Last year, the Houston Texans had the Offensive Rookie of the Year, the Defensive Rookie of the Year. Marvin Harrison Jr., plus 650. Explain to me, Darius Robinson, 35-1. What have been the early returns on him for Defensive Rookie of the Year? How big of an impact do you think he can be off the edge year one in this system with Jonathan Gannon?
Well, I think that's it. I don't know if he's going to be coming off the edge. I think he's going to be more interior and less, you know, sexy statistics. You're going to have to get kind of in the analytics as far as like pass rush, win rate and stuff like that. And sometimes the voters aren't privy to all that stuff, especially if you're not playing in like a big market. I don't know if he's going to have big gaudy sack numbers out of the gates just because of where he's going to start. Kind of like a 3-4 defensive end and their edge rushers. You wish he could help maybe supplement that a little bit because they don't have really anything coming off the edge. BJ Ojulari is a second round pick out of LSU, and Zaven Collins is a former first round pick who's switched positions. I think Darius Robinson could make some noise, but, you know, is he going to be able to return the statistics that would, you know, get him the votes down the stretch for Defensive Rookie of the Year? I'm a little skeptical as far as that goes.
Yeah, usually that award is like high first round talent, and it's like production, you know, it's like stats. Rarely do you see.
The one thing, though, is like Dallas Turner was what? The first guy off the board?
Yeah.
He was like 17th overall. So it is a little bit of a fluky year, but
I still think
an edge guy. Yeah.
I agree with that. I think Turner makes sense. I saw Byron Murphy's name floated by a couple of really smart people. Oh, another guy that makes sense. It's a weird year for defensive rookies. When I was looking at that, I didn't make a bet. That was one of the few futures markets I haven't made a bet in yet, Bo. When I was looking back at some of the historical stuff there, I was like, wow, it's really hard for a non-defensive lineman or linebacker to win that award. Sauce Gardner won it a couple years ago. That's the kind of year it takes from, you know, a secondary piece or, you know, a non-piece on the outside rushing to win that award. But I think overall, and this is where I think you can be a wet blanket about the Cardinals, I feel like the defense is in for a really tough year, despite the fact that Jonathan Gannon is a brilliant defensive mind.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, Nick Rawls was the youngest coordinator in the NFL last year, just turned 30 years old, and he wasn't exactly given the ton of talent to work with. I think interior of the defensive line was probably the least talented group we've seen in the NFL in 5 years. It was like XFL caliber players playing in the interior. They raised the talent floor there, but is it enough to where it's going to make a difference? I mean, they're going to be able to get off the field this year, where I think at the end of last year, they just couldn't. They had to find some weird ways as far as onside kicks and allowing offenses to maybe score at will. But I think they're upgraded, but they're going to have to get some production from some unique places that nobody's expecting. Like, people are going to have to, I mentioned Ojulari, I mentioned Zaven Collins, Darius Robinson, as we talked about. They're going to have to step up, and some young players like Garrett Williams on the out and the defensive secondary and Max Melton, they're going to have to get their hands on some football to put this offense in a position to win shootouts. And if they can get any kind of defensive performance this year, you know, say they are hovering around 20, that's going to be a good year for this defense.
Bo Brack, great stuff. PHNX Cardinals beat reporter, of course, does the podcast as well. Follow him at X on at Bo Brack. Appreciate the time, pal.
Always, guys. Appreciate it. Thank you.
More Sharp Money on the other side.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Oh, hey, July's ending with a bang. UFC 304, not just one, but two titles on the line. Get your own crown. Jump in on all the action at DraftKings Sportsbook, official partner of the UFC. Download the app now. Use code VSiN. That's code VSiN for new customers. Get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Only on DraftKings, the crown is yours. And we've booked such a great show today. My partner in crime here, Dustin Sweetelson. We've had four unbelievable guests in the first hour and a half of this show. We have two more coming up in our final hour. Adam Burke, Bob Nightingale. Neither of those names need any introduction. I'll just let the names speak for themselves. Dustin Sweetelson back here. I'm Jared Smith in for Patrick Maher this week. Exciting stuff on the horizon right now because we get to talk about our beloved baseball. I haven't talked a ton of baseball today. I've got some Nerfy picks. We'll get to those maybe a little later in the show. Maybe with Adam, I'll ask him about my Nerfies on the day. But we want to do our fun three up, three down segment right now. We have a Subway Series to talk about. So I guess we're not really allowed to be friends this week, Dustin, because our Mets and Yankees are playing each other. But let's talk Jose Quintana in the three-up segment because 8 career starts against the Yankees. He's been really good. ERA under 3, 35 Ks, whip 1.34, quality starts. The recent form for Quintana this season hasn't been good, but obviously against the Bronx Bombers, he's been positive.
Plus $1.30 in Yankee Stadium. I this isn't a situation where I give this information. I say, this is why you're betting it. I just thought this jumped out to me. Jose Quintana, who's really never been anything more than a number three at best in his career, somehow is really good against the New York Yankees.
Yeah.
Those numbers surprised me when I saw it was sub 3 through 8 starts. Quintana plus $1.30. Luis Gil, who righted the ship a little bit after a rocky couple starts there for the Yankees, minus 155. I think the Mets would be interesting. However, report came out a few hours ago. The Mets did not arrive back in New York from Miami because they had issues with their flight. They got back at 5:15 a.m. today.
Yeah, I don't like that at all.
However, the Yankees lineup they're throwing out there, can I read these names to you?
Please do.
Your leadoff hitter for the New York Yankees, Jamai Jones at DH. Then you have Soto and Judge, followed by Met legend J.D. Davis. Anthony Volpe is batting 5th. Gleyber Torres is 6th. Alex Verdugo, 6th. Carlos Narvaez, 7th. DJ LeMahieu is 8th. Wait, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. That was 9.
That lineup's fine.
That's not fine. DJ LeMahieu stinks.
J.D.
Davis is a
yesterday.
Reject.
He hit his first home run of the season. It's the lefty lineup. They're facing a lefty today. Verdugo's down in the order. He should be batting cleanup usually against righties. They need Stanton back. They need Rizzo back. I'm not debating that. I'm
Rizzo
down on the Yankees.
Too.
You're right, but he's
not
better than Jamai Jones. I mean,
Jamai Jones, lead off at DH.
Come on!
When you think of the stories of the legendary Bronx Bombers, you think DiMaggio, you think Mattingly, you think Jamai Jones.
Who would you rather have, Jamai Jones or Bomani Jones?
I'd rather have Matt Noakes and Randy Velarde.
So Danny Tartable, eat your heart out, Seinfeld.
Three up, three down. Just an interesting note on Quintana, who's a $1.30 dog here with the
Mets. I'm not betting the Mets tonight.
You can't do
it. You can't bet the Mets.
I just thought the information was interesting.
It is good information.
Let's
move on. You just can't
bet
the Mets tonight. Chris Sale, last 4 starts, I would say Cy Young-esque. So I love the fact, and Major League Baseball didn't do this on purpose. This is not a conspiracy. This is just coincidence. And to be fair, I don't believe in coincidences, so maybe it is a universal thing. The top 3 pitchers in the National League Cy Young race are all pitching tonight.
Yes.
Sale, Wheeler, and Skeens. Now, I don't know if it's going to line up that way the rest of the year, but if it does, oh, baby, you better get that live Cy Young market ready to go because this thing's going to be ping-ponging all over the map. Sale's been great this year. If the season ended today, he's your Cy Young winner. The biggest concern is, of course, longevity. He has these bursts of greatness, and then he kind of comes back down to earth. This is his first start after the break. Not a coincidence. The Braves waited to as long as possible to give him the longest rest possible. That's what the Phillies did with Zach Wheeler. It is a common misconception. You do not start your ace the first game back from the All-Star break. You let your ace pitch the last game before the rotation resets. You keep him as fresh as possible for as long as possible. Kudos to the Braves for doing that tonight. I think Sale pitches well against Cincinnati.
And they're big favorites here.
Yeah.
A minus 185 against the Reds. Martinez on the bump for Cincy. And when you talk about Chris Sale, we have to go back to 2019, the last time he cleared 140 innings. He threw 147 and a third. He's at 110 right now. Projected pace to go over, but you have to have concerns at 35 years old, and especially with his value to this rotation on a team that is in that current number one wild card spot at the moment. They need to keep this guy healthy. So I question how deep he's going to be going in these games, especially if Atlanta can get a lead against an inferior pitcher in Martinez, because they need him. There's no Strider. Freed's on the IL. The pitching staff is desperately clinging on to 35-year-old Chris Sale, 40-year-old Chuck Morton. They can't let him go too deep tonight.
You remember Rich Hill? Old Dick Mountain.
Dick Mountain.
Old
he's still
Dick
out
Mountain.
There.
He's, still out there. He's not pitching this year.
Another lefty here. Another lefty.
Yeah, bring us in. I'm too disconnected with this stuff. Garrett Crochet.
Well, potentially his final start as a member
you think
of the
it
Chicago
will be?
White.
I think it will be.
No, that's why I said potentially. I don't know.
I think
know.
It will be.
I think they have to sell high because they somehow found lightning in a bottle.
I also think unders tonight because they could pull him.
Absolutely. They proved the other
three
night
or four innings.
Before the All-Star break, they only let him go a couple innings, yep. Took him out. They didn't want to risk anything. There's too much on the line here. However, if you look what he's done his last four starts, and I have a 19-1 ticket on him for AL Cy Young, 18 2/3, a sub-2 ERA, 26 punch-outs. He has electric stuff. He has transitioned into this role incredibly. Again, though, the innings late in the year. I have a lot of questions about the buyers out there, the Baltimore Orioles, the Los Angeles Dodgers. How do you plan on using Garrett Crochet, who has never thrown this many innings and had to use his arm this long into a season, the way it's been used and abused this year by the White Sox? I have questions about the value and what you give back to Chicago in a trade for him. However, there's no doubt if you're getting him, you're thinking long term because he's under contract next year and he can be an ace for your staff. But he's going tonight against the Rangers. Rangers are the favorites, minus 135. Obviously, they have a good lineup, but they're potentially about to be sellers at the deadline as well.
I would bet under on. So sometimes the sports books give you a hint into the script. Crochet, every prop is available to bet Crochet tonight except one. Can you guess which one it is?
Total outs.
Guess why?
Because he's going to get pulled.
Yeah. Again, this is a guy that is consistently giving you six or seven innings. His props are always available. Yet tonight, you can bet strikeouts. You can bet hits. Can't bet out.
See, Adam Burke coming up next, VSiN managing editor, one of the best people when it comes to analytics in the baseball community. I'm putting that nationally, anywhere. I want to
no
ask
disagreement
him.
Here.
I want to ask him about this when he comes on. Garrett Crochet's value, the perceived value from Chicago is, well, we'll limit his innings. I think these teams need to factor in the ramp up to be a starter and start that day. All the pitches you throw to get ready in the bullpen, in, you know, underneath the stadium when you're stretching out and you're getting ready for the start. There's a ramp up period that needs to be factored in outside of just innings pitched. And I think Adam would agree with me that that's playing a role in the hesitancy. So the White Sox can play games all they want with limiting his innings to 2, 3, 4 innings tonight. That ramp up period and all the work he has to do pregame is going to play a role in his value.
I agree. I honestly think as good as Crochet is, to me, if I was trading for him right now, I'd want him to be my closer. Now, I don't know if that's going to happen.
Or an Andrew Miller role.
Go look at the Yankees the last time they won the World Series. Jabba Chamberlain and the role that he played on that team.
That multi-inning reliever in the playoffs, David Price, his rookie year with the Rays, coming up being that multi-inning reliever, getting to let it fly.
Yeah.
That has a lot of value to bridge that gap because now you're using a guy with the stuff of a starter in a smaller role to get you to your setup guy and your closer, and you've now shortened the game.
I mean, it helped that the Yankees had Mariano Rivera closing for them, but they went through a bunch of different relievers that year. Man, I'm going through their roster now. That year for the Yankees was fantastic. Jabba did mostly starting that year, but he did some relieving in the bullpen as well down the stretch. Phil Hughes, the other one I'm thinking of, that they moved from the rotation to the bullpen, who had a lot of success in that role. Obviously, 15 years later, I'm not trying to compare these two guys, much different pitchers. They even throw with different arms. But there is a certain semblance of stuff that he has, and I think it translates much better to the bullpen. And you started to see the transition even before the All-Star break. He only pitched 2 innings in his final start before the break. If you can find under 15.5 outs anywhere tonight for Garrett Crochet, I would absolutely make that bet. I like the Nerfy in that game, too. We talked about it a little earlier with Thunder Dan. But I definitely think they're telling you there's something fishy going on with Crochet's start tonight. They usually give you an outs prop. It's usually in the 16 to 18 range, depending on his opponent. Tonight, they're not even letting you bet it. And I think that is very telling. All right, Adam Burke on the other side. We'll continue the baseball conversation. Skating Tripods joins us next. This is Sharp Money. You're watching Visa.